podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Alice Inside Cricket. The England winter is finally over with that excellent 3-0 win in the T20 series in the Caribbean, a sort of bookend of the series in a way, with the success they had in Sri Lanka at the start of it and finishing with a triumph at the end. And it's close now to the beginning of the English season. Simon Mann's not back yet from gallivanting around the Caribbean, so I've got a special guest today, Mark Ramprakash, who has come back from the Caribbean after the Test series. Ramps, we're here at the Oval, the Keir Oval, where, of course, you scored about 72 hundreds. Do you look out there? The greenhouse is out on the middle there, where the players have been practising, the kind of covered tent where they practice in March. Is the juice is flowing for scoring a few runs out on your favourite bit of pasture?
Always, yes. And the Oval is a special place for me, no question about it. I first came here with my dad, I think in 1984. We watched England v West Indies Test match. And then I was lucky enough to play a practice game here with Middlesex in 1987, where I faced a little bit of Sylvester Clark. And that was a good experience. So, but it's always a good pitch here. You can look out.
That's why you came here, isn't it?
It looks white, doesn't it? From the pavilion edge or the boundary edge, and that normally means it's quite dry and therefore batsman friendly.
So. You know that Surrey have produced more 100-100 makers than any other county. Of course, you're one of them, but more people who've got the 100-100s here, including John Edrich, of course, before you, Andy Sandham. I'm trying to reel them off now. Jack Hobbs. You're part of an elite group here, and the first one was Tom Hayward in about 1920. So it's a phenomenal record that the Surrey batsmen have got, but I suppose it has partly to do with the great pitch, but you have got to get the runs as well.
Yes, of course. I mean, look, I think that the thing about the pitch is that normally it would have consistent bounce, probably one of the best pitches in England for consistent bounce, which is very important for any batsman to know whether to go forward or back and trust the bounce. I mentioned about it looking white from the pavilion. Normally, there's not necessarily a lot of sideways movement. I think you have to be a very, very good bowler to get wickets at the Oval.
Well, thank you very much, because my career best was here. Would you believe you? That's a beautiful little lead-in. Thank you very much.
That's a nice half-volley for you.
It's a half-volley. 7 for 35 I got against Surrey. Unfortunately, I think it did. And it was actually a very poor Surrey team. And I think 6 of the 7 were sort of numbers 6 to 11. But, I'm quite proud of it, actually. All quite caught right second too. Slip, John Embry.
Brilliant.
So, fantastic, quite proud of that. Yeah. I think partly because the Oval, at least the ball carries. So, a short arse like me, can actually get the ball to bounce a bit. So, well, I mean, it's a great place to be. Of course, the county championship will be defended from here in only about 2 or 3 weeks' time. And it's Essex, who are the visitors of Surrey, to kind of almost carry on that encounter at the end of last summer, which was a fantastic match, which Essex obviously won in the end by one wicket. For you, things are changing, are they, a bit? Because you've been told you're not going to be involved in the Ashes as the England batting coach. So, firstly, I mean, what are you proudest of that you've achieved so far as a coach?
Well, I think to be in a role like that, a specialist role, for that period of time, which I think is over 5 years, I think that you have to work hard at trying to build good relationships, with the players that come into the side. And that's really important. The players have, I think, got to feel that you're in their corner, that you you work hard to have a sort of a trusting relationship, an open and honest relationship, that you can get on well socially, and therefore that may aid communication between the two. I think it's not sort of a coach to player relationship. It's just more, on an equal footing. And so I'd like to think that over that period of time, I've worked hard to try and support players, nurture them, encourage them, but now and again challenge them to improve and get better with their games. So I don't know that there's any. I can't really give you any hard and fast stats or anything like that. But I think that I'm proud in the way that I've tried to accelerate people's learning and help them cope with the pressures and the demands of international cricket.
It must be very hard being a batsman in the modern era, because I mean, not only because there's this stat that bowlers are taking their wickets at the lowest rate since 1959. In 2018, bowlers were taking their wickets at 27 in Test cricket, and that hasn't been as low since the 1950s. So there's that aspect. But also, because of the number of different formats that batsmen play now as well, it must be quite hard being a modern batsman. Would you see it like that? Would you like to have been a batsman in this era, or are you happier that you were a batsman when you played?
Look, I've got every sympathy for the modern day player that's trying to make a success at the top of the order in Test match cricket. I think that I can go as far back as Sam Robson, Adam Lyth. I mean, I watched Sam Robson get an excellent 100 at Headingley, and Adam Lyth got one there as well
in a Test match.
Good Test match 100 against New Zealand. But these players were having to play 5 tests in a row with no county game in between. And as you say, for the last 3 years, I think that the ball has moved prodigiously. And that's the data, if you like, would show that the ball has moved around appreciably. And Alistair Cook has openly admitted that, you know, it's been incredibly difficult. Of course, bowlers have improved bowling around the wicket to left-handers, which is something significant as well. You mentioned about the different formats. Yes, there's no question. I mean, our scheduling has been really thrust white ball cricket to the fore, and we're playing that in the best weather of the summer. And, you know, 4 championship games in April, 4 in September. You know, it's pretty obvious where the priorities lie for ECB. And I think the players have felt that. I think if you're a traditional orthodox player, you're playing your championship cricket at difficult times of the year. And it may be that you don't make your one-day team for your county, like Sam Robson, who, you know, so therefore your cricket becomes sporadic when hopefully the sun's out, which is June, July, August. So I've got a lot of sympathy for the players who are trying to make it at the top of the order in Test cricket. I mean, for example, we go on tour. A lot of the one-day, if you take this winter, for example, a lot of the one-day side, the one-day matches were played at the start of the tour in Sri Lanka. And Trevor Bayliss was, commented on how helpful that was in terms of the Test series, because there is a lot of core players in that one-day team that were also played in the Test matches. And so they were kind of up and running and had plenty of nets and practice and one or two games before the Test series started. Now, if you're only playing Test matches, you come across and you might get, two-day games, which are not first class. You might get a couple of knocks, and then you're into 3 Test matches back-to-back.
With no time to practice in between. Yeah, so someone like Keaton Jennings, he had a knock and a half before that Test series in the West Indies against some pretty good bowlers.
Yeah, it's a testing surface. We played at 3 Ws. It was a bit tacky in the morning with the new ball, and it was tough. And so people have got to realise. I mean, I think we're talking about a subject where there are several elements that come together that make top order batting in Test cricket very, very difficult in this modern era. And I think this, you know, the preparation and lack of match cricket for each tour is certainly one element. A lack of matches in between the Test matches. And if you don't come in and straight away find your feet, if you come in and the opposition new ball bowlers get on top of you, dismiss you early, it's very, very difficult to fight back, because you're talking about confidence and belief at a higher level where you haven't really played much. So where do you draw your confidence from? And then once you get it, you know, if you have a couple of low scores, it'd be very, very difficult to turn the tide in that way. And I mean, someone like Keaton Jennings, let's remember, he got 100 on Test debut, didn't he, at Mumbai, and a wonderful 100 it was. But he's found the going, you know, difficult in bowler-friendly conditions. Mind you, I mean, it wasn't, you know, if you look at the last summer, the Indians came over with some very well-recognised Test-run scorers, and they really struggled as well. So look, it's not just English players. I think it's a bit of a global issue, that there's so much prominence and importance given to the white ball cricket. Of course, the white ball does not swing, it does not seam, and often the pitches are flat and the ball doesn't spin, so you see it and smack it. And it's a very popular saying at the moment, oh, I keep it simple, I see it, hit it. Okay, well, you can do that with a ball that doesn't move. But I think a little bit more... Test cricket is a little bit more challenging, and so therefore, you know, the hours that you have to put in practicing your basics against perhaps swing, pace and spin, you know, it's a demanding game.
Yes, it looks it, certainly. I mean, the last couple of years, the amount the ball has moved in England in Test cricket has blown my mind. I mean, I just think it's virtually impossible with the new ball to deal with it. And I know Alistair Cook has said that. What about practice? How has practice changed, say, for a Test match compared to when you played? Has it changed much? Is it more intense? Is it less intense? Is there different philosophies?
Well, I think that our practice, you have to really incorporate the player's view on how they want to prepare. I mean, after all, the player's been picked for their country. It's their career. I certainly am not prescriptive in how they should practice. I would certainly ask a few questions if they were only having a few full bungers to prepare for Mornay Morkel and...
Or Jasprit Bumrah or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I think, you know, currently in the England team, you know, if we had 2 days practice out, you know, that the players would say, well, look, OK, the coaches can sort of choose 2 days out, you know, if it's challenging practice, so we might use... you know, cut down bats on a spinning surface to challenge the players or, you know, set up some scenario. So that's hopefully improving skills. Mm. The day before the match is perhaps more the players choosing of how they want to practice, if they want to face bowlers or if they just want a few throws out of the hand or, you know, a few spinners. You know, whatever that is, then that's more the players' responsibility. My own feeling is that when you come into Test cricket, you're not, no one's the finished article. Just because you've been picked, it doesn't mean that that's it. You've cracked it. And whilst you're preparing for the opposition that you're going to play against, the training at some point, it has to be harder and more challenging than what you might face in the game. Now the player needs to have a certain mindset for that. They need to be open-minded, have a growth mindset, and say to themselves, look, OK, I might really struggle in this particular session for the next half an hour, but I'm not going to let that affect my confidence, and I know that when I go in the game, it won't be as tough as this. So whether it's facing very quick pace with some softer balls or with the ball spinning a lot and they're using a half bat, I think that when you come into Test cricket, if you train in that manner, then you are... in a good place to go and face the best bowlers in the world.
Could you pick out one player who you think does really challenge himself in practice all the time?
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, Joe Root is the obvious one who comes to mind. You mentioned about when I was on tour with England, and you know, I mean, we used to sort of do the net schedule, and you'd hope to face some England bowlers, but if you didn't, you might face the odd net bowler and then have a few throws. But you know, now the lads, you know, they've got these side arms, you know, that...
Which you've cut down one, haven't you?
Yeah.
Made it a bit shorter.
Down. Well, that's really... you like to put variety. Some of them bounce more and others are a bit flatter in trajectory. A bit, maybe you're a bit, you know...
A shorter one.
Come onto the drive of the bat a little bit, like, hate yourself. Yeah. But,
I made you into the batsman. I gave you the ability to drive the ball by bowling half volleys in the nets all the time.
Swinging half volleys.
Yeah, I honed your technique, you realise. I reckon I should own about 10 of your hundreds. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
They were good
times. So the dog stick, you were talking about Joe Root there. So
he is
someone who really likes to be challenged by all sorts of different varieties.
Well, the modern day player is lucky in that they've got so much volume. You know, and so that's a huge difference. They've got the option to hit a lot of balls, and Joe certainly does. Of course, that on its own is not going to improve someone. You've got to have a bit more purpose. You've got to know what you're working on, and Joe is Joe's his best own coach, if you like. He's very self-aware about his mechanics and his technique and what he wants to work on.
So will he choose on some in a particular thing on a particular day? This is what I want to work on this today.
Yes, he will have a discussion with me, and you know, we will talk about this and that. We might reflect on the previous game. You know, in Sri Lanka, he was very keen on being very aggressive to the spinners. And so, you know, as a coach, you've got to go with that. If that's the player's gut feeling, you've got to go with that. But at the same time, in Test cricket, as we know, you have to have a decent defence. Otherwise, you know, it's very hard to make a career. The best players in the world, Joe Root, Virat Kohli, Kane Williamson, all are classy players that can adapt. They've got good defence. They trust their defence. But they've also got good attacking shots. Joe is very technically aware. I think, you know, so that it, from that standpoint, it might be that when we prepare against the West Indies, we might, say, throw some balls from wide of the crease, a bit like to replicate Roach's angle. Might come closer to try and get a steeper bounce, a bit like a Jason Holder. Or if it's Mitchell Starc, I might be around the wicket trying to get the ball swinging to him. So we're trying to replicate the challenges that the opposition will present.
And they're going to miss that, actually, aren't they? Because you are probably, along with Gooch, and I guess there are one or two others as well, but you're very good at your adaptability with the dog stick to, you can even bowl sort of back of the hand slower balls and swing it both ways and all that is quite valuable, especially when you're not going to get that many chances to face your own bowlers, presumably in practice. So you being able to replicate those bowlers is pretty valuable.
Well, I'd like to think so. I mean, I do believe in a variety in your practice. You know, I think that there has to be time where you enjoy hitting the ball out the middle of the bat, you know, and that might be some throws out the hand, it might be some short and wides where you're practicing your cut shot. You know, you also can build confidence in that way, of course. So you've got your challenging practice, perhaps. You've got your, you know, a few ball, you're facing a few bowlers, and then you've got, you know, maybe some throwdowns and or some balls on the bowling machine where you're enjoying, you know, executing some attacking shots. And so you've got that variety, and hopefully, you know, that's putting the players in a good place to tick a lot of boxes, and when they walk out over the white line, that they feel prepared.
You're listening to the Analyst Inside Cricket podcast with me, Simon Hughes, and Mark Ramprakash. Any regrets that you know, something that you wanted to achieve which you hadn't in your coaching role so far, anyway?
Well, I mean, I've mentioned about, you know, trying to build good relationships, good strong relationships. I feel like I've done my best with that. I think, you know, obviously I'm a coach. I don't select the team. So you try your best to work with the players that come into the side and settle them down and make them feel relaxed and take the pressure off the fact that they're playing for their country and it's a huge moment in their careers. So, you know, you try your best to help the players with all of those challenges. You know, of course, in an ideal world, I would have wanted personally to have had a little bit more stability in the batting lineup. But as we've spoken about, there's a number of reasons why England's haven't had that stability at the top order. And, you know, as I say, I mean, England's greatest ever run scorer, Alistair Cook, has found the last few years really, really challenging, and yet he's got all those international runs behind him. You know, there's a reason why I think you see England have a number of all-rounders in their lineup that are playing both one-day cricket and Test cricket. It's almost like they get a bit of, you know, two bites of the cherry. I mean, someone like Bairstow and Stokes and Moeen Ali, you know, they're very well. They're world-class all-rounders, aren't they? But if they are struggling a little bit with the bat, then, you know, it takes the pressure off, if you like, to be able to rock up and get three for
or key wicket or whatever,
or take a few catches. So yeah, to have all your eggs in one basket and be a top-order player for England is really challenging.
And actually, also the advantage of those players is because they play both formats. You know, you're getting that sort of preparation, like in the Sri Lanka series, for instance. They got the one-day cricket first, so they're acclimatised, then they can play the tests. Yeah. Whereas if you just come in for the tests, it's much tougher.
Absolutely.
You've had to do yourself, actually, as coach, of course.
It's disjointed for those players. The two tests that were tagged on at the end of the New Zealand series, you know, players had had a break for 5-6 weeks and then they flew back out. They'd been in Australia for the Ashes, they flew home, and then they, a few weeks later they flew out to New Zealand. You know, it's a bit disjointed, and it's not necessarily easy to get straight into rhythm. And in New Zealand, you know, we had up against some very good new bowlers in Bolt and Southee, who swung the ball and bowled extremely well. So, you know, of course, England, you know, people will talk a lot about England's batting collapses. I mean, if you know, when we're playing well, of course, we're forthright and aggressive, and players are playing well, and it's great to watch. But how do we become more consistent? Well, essentially, you need more top-class players with good techniques who are prepared to adapt to conditions, and that they are batsmen, and that they're interested in the art of batting. So we've seen Pujara do it in Australia.
I watched a lot of it, actually.
Right.
Impressive.
Very impressive.
And he doesn't care about one-day cricket. He's not interested, you see. He says, I'm happy playing tests. But you're not going to get too many people doing that partly because of the rewards of playing one-day cricket.
Absolutely. I mean, you only have to look in county cricket at the moment. And if you took a poll of the modern-day players, you know, test cricket is still very important. But in terms of putting in the hours of the art of playing against the moving ball... I think the evidence is there that there are less players interested in sort of doing those hard yards.
You're going to miss, I would imagine, a few things, but I would imagine one of the things you're going to miss, certainly temporarily, is being midfield general on those pre-match football games. You kind of ghost around like a sort of Franz Beckenbauer kind of character.
You're very kind, Simon.
I suppose you're going to equate your performances to some Arsenal star now.
Well, possibly a little bit of Patrick Vieira in there now and again.
No, because he was a bit of a thug. You're too nice. I know you have a dark side, by the way, but you know it doesn't come out on the football field very often.
I enjoyed that. I mean, of course, you know, being part of the. It was a huge, huge privilege to be part of the England setup for 5 years. The players, the staff, I mean, you know, wonderful experiences touring the world, and I've been very, very lucky. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, this is a huge summer, and, you know, I wish everybody really the best of luck.
And what next for you, actually? Any plans at the moment?
Well, I'm open-minded, Simon, so, you know, any suggestions are welcome.
Yes, well, I mean, I would suggest you get out there and have a net, because it looks very inviting. It's a beautiful afternoon at the Keir Oval. There's that tent there ready for you, pitch. I could even give you a few throwdowns, maybe. I don't think that would be much of a challenge, though. Anyway, it's been great having you. Good luck with everything. Well done. You should really be proud of everything you've achieved, because actually it's fantastic to be able to go from being a top-class batsman to being a top-class coach. So, you know, I'm sure this is only the end of the beginning rather than the beginning of the end. So good luck to you. Thanks very much to everyone for listening. And Simon Mann will be back from his gallivanting around the Caribbean next week.
Podcast Network.